welcome back to the Townships at 12. This is part two of the show, and thanks for staying with me. We're kicking off this half hour with a powerful song called Carry It On by the legendary Buffy St. Marie, a perfect lead into the conversation we're about to have. In just a moment, I'll be joined by Delaney Hines, Senior Manager of Health Equity Partnerships with the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Canada. We'll be talking about health equity, what it means, why it matters, and how it connects to heart health and stroke prevention for the Indigenous communities across Canada. I'll also be bringing you some health news and, of course, more great music throughout this half hour. So stay right here. Meaningful conversation, important health information, and great tunes coming up. Here's Buffy St. Marie with Carry It On.
Hold your head up. Lift the top of your mind, put your eyes on the earth, lift your heart to your own home planet. What do you see? What is your attitude? Are you here to improve or damn it? Look right now and you will see we're only here by the skin of our teeth as it is. So take heart and take care of your link with life and hope. Makes the world go round, that's only temporary confusion. It ain't governments that make the people strong, it's the opposite illusion. Look right now, and you will see they're only here by the skin of their teeth as it is. So take heart and take care of your link. As it is, so take heart and take care of your link with life. It's beautiful if you got the sense to take care of your source of perfection. Mother Nature, she's the daughter of God and the source of all protection. Look right now and you will see she's only here by the skin of her teeth. As it is, so take heart and take care of your link.
Today we're talking about heart health and stroke prevention, and about the importance of understanding these issues from an Indigenous perspective. Heart disease and stroke remain leading causes of death in Canada, but they don't affect all communities in the same way. Culture, access to care, history, and social conditions all play a role in health outcomes, which is why Indigenous-led research and Indigenous voices are so important in shaping solutions. Joining me today is Delaney Hines, Senior Manager for Health Equity Partnerships for the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Canada. Maureen Dillon Teasdale for theCUBE. Very happy today to welcome Delaney Hines to the Townships at 12. Now, Delaney is the Senior Manager of Health Equity Partnership for the Health and Stroke Foundation of Canada. So welcome, Delaney.
Thank you for having me, Maureen.
To start, could you tell our listeners about your role with the Heart and Stroke and what Indigenous health and research means in your work?
Well, I have the esteemed privilege, Maureen, of serving as the Senior Manager for Health Equity Partnerships at Heart and Stroke. And in a nutshell, my role involves relationship building, engagement, and developing strategic partnerships with diverse communities and partner organizations, all in an effort to achieve Heart and Stroke's health equity goals that are in alignment with our strategic mission pillars and initiatives. As part of that role, my role involves evolving our equity, diversity, and inclusion initiatives, and also advancing our Indigenous health and reconciliation strategy. So we work very intimately in partnership with Indigenous communities to dismantle systemic barriers, expand access to ultimately safe care, and ultimately improve health outcomes for First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people.
Why do you think it's so important to look at heart health through an Indigenous lens rather than a one-size-fits-all approach?
You know, it's a great question. In the teachings I've received from colleagues at Heart and Stroke, elders and knowledge keepers I've had the privilege of meeting through my role at Heart and Stroke, we recognize that one-size-fits-all approaches often misses out on the distinct histories, strengths, and structural realities that shape cardiovascular risk, access to care, and health outcomes in Indigenous communities. The beauty of working in collaboration with Indigenous communities, we've naturally kind of formed this harmonious relationship where we can walk this path towards better health outcomes together. And, you know, it calls to mind the concept of two-eyed seeing, you know, promoting co-learning and viewing the world through a Western lens and an Indigenous way of knowing lens. And those things wouldn't have been born organically if we were to have applied a one-size-fits-all approach. So it's, you know, recognizing and appreciating traditional Indigenous ways of knowing and working in lockstep is the benefit of not always taking a one-size-fits-all approach.
Now, what are some of the key heart and stroke health challenges facing the Indigenous peoples in Canada today?
So it's important to maybe baseline folks before just diving into that question specifically, in that, you know, we can't speak to challenges that Indigenous communities are facing without also acknowledging the realities. You know, we take it upon ourselves at Heart and Stroke not to define people by the health outcomes that might be prevalent in their communities. Oftentimes, First Nations, Inuit, Métis communities are often perceived only through illness or risk and hardship. And we understand that Indigenous people themselves aren't sick, but, you know, Indigenous communities have been underinvested in, and still their strength persists. So I wanted to make sure I put that up front before then identifying that there are many risk factors we see prevalent in Indigenous communities, much like, you know, poor food quality or lack of care access or inadequate housing and not enough physical space. These are systemic risk factors. They're not personal failings by any means, but we do see them show and rear their ugly head in Indigenous communities. And Heart and Stroke appreciates that, you know, heart disease rates of Indigenous peoples are usually much higher as a byproduct of these social determinants, so to speak, that are disproportionately burdening Indigenous communities. So, you know, the risk factors are rife, but the heart and stroke challenges facing Indigenous peoples is a byproduct of settler colonialism and much of the historical trauma that we see transferring intergenerationally.
Mm-hmm. So factors like housing, food access, and stress certainly affect the heart health of the Indigenous peoples.
That's exactly it. The social, economic, the social determinants of health, as you mentioned, income, housing, access to food, physical space, those are things that, you said it perfectly, have a significant influence and impact on health outcomes for folks. And we see those things adversely impacting Indigenous communities, not like I said, because of personal failings, but of the systemic challenges that Heart and Stroke and other organizations are trying to attend to.
Okay. Now, how is Heart and Stroke working with Indigenous communities and research in a respectful and collaborative way?
That's a great question. Since my time at Heart and Stroke, I've been here for going on 4 years. We've taken an approach to working with Indigenous communities that's grounded in respect, reciprocity, and long-term partnership. We value and appreciate that reconciliation is not something we're just doing symbolically. It's really built into and sustained in our strategic commitments. It's embedded within our Indigenous health strategy and our broader equity, diversity, and inclusion work. And in recent years, we've taken concrete steps to align our research practices as well with Indigenous values and governance frameworks. We recognize and respect Indigenous principles of data sovereignty and stewardship, including, you know, the First Nations ownership, control, and access protection principles, the OCAP principles, and care principles, and principles of ethical Métis research, and the list goes on. You know, we take these commitments to heart, no pun intended, and really work to ensure that Indigenous consent and use of information are built into our practices and policies, and in building that across our partnerships and relationships with other organizations, all mutually aligned and driving positive outcomes for Indigenous communities.
Why is it important that Indigenous communities guide the research about their own health?
That is, once again, it's vital that we have Indigenous communities and Indigenous representatives part of this work, because this is the work that will attend to the problems that are born in their communities. As I mentioned before, there are distinct histories, distinct cultural practices, and value in Indigenous ways of knowing that we wouldn't be able to arrive at without having them involved in the actual ideation, conception, and solutioning for challenges we see burdening Indigenous communities. So having them involved at the outset not only responds to the actual calls to truth and reconciliation, but it also builds in that intimate connection to the challenges that won't be understood well enough or be responded to in an appropriate, culturally appropriate way had it been that Indigenous communities weren't engaged and involved from the beginning.
Can you give us an example of the kind of research or a program that's making a real difference right now?
We have so many to count. Our research program actually values strategic growth from a perspective of personnel or people, projects, and platforms. So I'll spend a bit more time diving into how we're trying to build that strategic growth in our personnel. In 2023, Heart and Stroke launched what's called the Personnel Awards for Indigenous Scholars. And it's a funding program dedicated to growing the or removing financial barriers for master's and doctoral level Indigenous scholars pursuing their studies related to heart and or brain health. And it seeks to reduce barriers to participation at the training stage of becoming a health researcher or clinician scientist. And it aims to once again cultivate a strong Indigenous presence in the heart and brain health research community. We just recently awarded 4 more Indigenous scholars this past fall, and we hope to continue to offer that competition in the years to come to continue building that critical mass of Indigenous scholars. So that's one program that's really near and dear to my heart.
Okay. What are some practical steps people can take to protect their heart health, especially within the Indigenous communities?
I'm glad you asked. As I made mention before, heart disease rates tend to show up at a much higher, 50% higher than in non-Indigenous populations. And the death rate from stroke is twice as high as well. And many of these brain health disparities between Indigenous and non-Indigenous populations have also been well documented. And we recognize at Heart and Stroke that taking some proactive approaches, recognizing your own risk factors, and being able to kind of attend to own personalized recommendations would be something that folks could do practically to kind of protect their heart health. And that's why the Heart and Stroke developed the risk screen tool. And without, you know, it's a quick, free, easy to use tool that can be found at heartandstroke.ca/risk screen. And it's built on the most up-to-date evidence. In a matter of minutes, it'll provide you with a personalized risk profile and recommendation on things you can do today to prevent long-term poor health outcomes. And it's, in my mind, one of the best practical steps people can take is knowing their risks and understanding the steps they can take to avoid any adverse outcomes down the line.
Mm-hmm. Now, how do traditional knowledge and cultural practices fit into the heart health and healing?
Once again, a great, great question in that, you know, we have to acknowledge that the histories and the cultures and the teachings of Indigenous peoples many a time are tantamount to some of the Western approaches we take. We have to appreciate that, you know, not only in Indigenous communities, but across the board, people heal through a variety of different ways, you know, through food, storytelling, connection, movement, sharing spaces, recognizing that these traditional cultural practices, the knowledge translation from land-based activity, they all have these tangible and sometimes intangible benefits that can be borne on communities and loved ones. And the same way we see trauma that can be transmitted intergenerationally, so could heart healthy habits be transmitted intergenerationally. And that's the beauty of building in connectivity with community and transferring that knowledge through connection are some of the ways that traditional knowledge and cultural practices we see in Indigenous communities really having benefits that go beyond that of just, responding to responding with a clinical intervention, for example.
Now, what role does physical activity and nutrition play, and how can they be made more accessible?
One of the key risk factors we've kind of recognized in our heart and stroke, our clinically significant heart and stroke heart month report, is that physical inactivity does have some troubling, we're seeing troubling rates of physical inactivity, poor diet, and metabolic conditions. And as these troubling rates continue to increase, we're seeing downstream impacts that we would rather not, that are undesirable. So what we'd love to continue to promote is land-based activities, going outdoors, building that connection with the land, and continue to increase your physical activity, because early action to begin attending to your risk factors, we've seen as little as 15 minutes of physical activity can really have a fantastic impact on your heart and brain health. It's the small contributions of time or small periods of time you contribute to your own heart and brain health that over time the benefits are so tantamount to what can be done by simply, you know, taking a prescription medication. It's taking your health into your own hands and being proactive, and we see that having very, very beautiful effects on folks' health.
Mm-hmm. Now, what warning signs of stroke or heart attack should people never ignore?
Well, let's break this down across both heart attack and stroke. Marina, I hope you're familiar with the fast signs of stroke, which we've been really adamant at Heart and Stroke of building the awareness and uptake of the fast signs across the country. And FAST stands for F, being face. Are you seeing your face? Is it drooping? Is one side of your face drooping? Arms, can you lift both arms? If not, there's probably a sign there. Slurred speech, is your speech slurred? If you see these three things in combination, it's time to call 911. So the FAST signs are an easy moniker or acronym for folks to memorize, so that if they are confronted with an individual who shows their face drooping or an inability to lift both arms or slurred speech, that's usually indicative of a stroke event. And for heart attack, the signs are also, a bit numerous. But if you come up against chest discomfort or pressure or fullness or pain or, upper body discomfort in your neck, your jaw, shoulder, arms, back, sweating, nausea, these aren't things to take lightly. It's important that you activate emergency services in your area, call 911 or your local respective number to try and seek medical attention.
How do you think families and communities can support one another when it comes to heart health?
That calls back to attention the comment I made earlier. Connection is healing. Connection is intuitive to Indigenous cultures. What I've been told and learned from my colleagues and elders in my network is healing doesn't require special equipment, money, or programs. Connection can really be one variable that folks can control that does so much intangibly for folks. As well, like we mentioned before, families and communities can support one another by imparting heart-healthy habits, by spending time with loved ones, by sharing space together, by storytelling and imparting the wisdom that comes from lived experiences. These are some of the ways we've learned through our community connections that families and communities can support one another when it comes to heart health. And also sharing your lived experience, whether it be through our risk screen tool and understanding the recommendations that are born out of that, imparting that knowledge to your loved ones is something that all folks can do, and is very quick and easy.
Mm-hmm. What changes would you like to see in Canada's health system to better support Indigenous heart health?
As we've both been talking about today, there is a history in Canada that goes back generations. According to the latest available data, there is over 1.8 million Indigenous people living in Canada, representing 5% of the total population. Settler colonialism has created conditions that have led to wide disparities in health outcomes. And we see Indigenous communities continually facing discrimination, mistreatment within the healthcare system. And as a result, the corollary of that, they're much less likely to seek care, or the risks, as we talked about today, are continuing to increase, whether that be risk with living with heart disease or stroke. So we continue to do our part, as I made mention, with our commitment to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada. We Oftentimes, a heart and stroke call upon the federal, provincial, and territorial governments to acknowledge the current state of Indigenous health and appreciating that the policies and programs that can be born from our elected officials' platforms need to call out specifically how they'll continue to attend to the needs and the requirements Indigenous communities require to be able to build towards a health outlook or health outcomes that are beneficial to them. So much of our advocacy and work alongside our government officials is to do just that.
Anything in particular that gives you hope when you look at the work being done today?
I can speak to the commitment I see at the Heart and Stroke. We have an Indigenous health strategy guided by a 10-year vision wherein we're focusing on expanding our research portfolio while continuing our efforts to, you know, increase public awareness of risk factors and education, heart and brain health education, health systems and public policy, as I mentioned. You know, we take really good care and stewardship of our donor dollars and are investing millions over the next 3 years to continue to support building out new research programs. And the beauty of that is we're seeing partners like the Canadian Institute for Health Research joining in and leveraging these dollars to increase and amplify the impact of these types of initiatives. So I'm really, you know, compelled and really privileged to be at a foundation that is not, like I said, symbolically committed to truth and reconciliation, but is investing not only our you know, people and person hours, but also the accumulation of donor dollars that we've been able to arrive and use it to serve the needs of Indigenous communities across the country.
If there's one message you'd like listeners to take away about Indigenous heart health, what would it be?
Indigenous communities have been underinvested in for far too long, and yet you see their strength continues to persist. It's incumbent that we all work together and collectively commit to truth and reconciliation. And only together can we undo the harms that have persisted and impacted Indigenous communities disproportionately. But I know that with a singular and persistent dedication to dismantling the structures and systems that perpetuate these shortcomings is the only way we can realize a future where Indigenous peoples are able to thrive and strive and achieve the opportunity that are deserving of. So I think that's maybe what I would like for folks to know is that, you know, listeners, Indigenous communities are strong, they persist, and they continue to show resilience, but it's time for us to help them lessen the burden they have to carry.
Okay, great message. Where can people go to learn more about Heart and Stroke's work in this area?
I implore folks to visit us at www.heartandstroke.ca/whatwedo/Indigenous Health. You can learn more about our current and past initiative to advance Indigenous health. We've been working to deliver programming since the early 90s, starting with our Heart Smart Kids programming, and continue to do so, investing in Indigenous personnel through our personnel awards and also building out research programs that also attend to problems and challenges that are burdening Indigenous communities. So folks, please do visit our website once again, www.heartandstroke.ca, where you can learn more about Indigenous health and the efforts Heart and Stroke is taking to advance equity for the community.
Okay. Anything we left out that you'd like to add, Delaney?
No, I think that's it.
Well, we thank you very much. Yeah. We've been talking with Delaney Hines, Senior Manager, Health Equity Partnerships for the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Canada. So thanks very much.
Thank you.
And next up, it's time for some health news here on the Townships at 12. And today we're going to be talking about the March break. March break is a time for fun and relaxation, but it's also easy for routines to disappear. And that can affect how we feel physically and mentally. A healthy lifestyle during the March break doesn't mean strict schedules or saying no to treats. It just means keeping a little balance. First, keep your bodies moving. Whether it's walking, skating, swimming, or playing outside, physical activity helps burn off stress and improve sleep, especially for kids and teens who may be spending more time on screens. Second, aim for simple, nourishing meals. March break often means more snacking and takeout, so try to balance that with fruits, vegetables, and plenty of water. Dehydration can sneak up when routines change. Sleep is another big one. Staying up late once in a while is fine, but keeping a roughly regular bedtime helps prevent crankiness and exhaustion. And finally, mental health matters too. Take time for fun, connection, and rest. March break should recharge you, not wear you out. A little movement, good food, enough sleep, and time to relax can make this break healthier and happier for everybody. And that's our health news today on the Townships at 12. And that brings us to the end of today's edition of the Townships at 12. A big thank you to both of my guests today, Dennis Katsouris from Townshippers Association and Delaney Hines from the Heart and Stroke Foundation of Canada, for taking the time to join me and share their insights. If you have a community announcement you'd like me to read on the air, or if you have an idea for a future interview, I'd love to hear from you. You can email me anytime at cjmqnews@gmail.com. Just a reminder that the Townships at 12 will be taking a short break next week for the March break, but I'll be back as usual the following week with more guests, more community news, and more great music. We'll close today's show with Generation by Buffy St. Marie. Thanks so much for listening, and take care. Have a great March break.
And soon they'll leave you to your yesterday. And they'll sing bye-bye scars of history and bye-bye banker's trust. Aquarius is shining, but the sun is one of us. And me, I don't wanna go to the moon. I'm gonna leave that moon alone. I just wanna dance with the rosebud seal this summer. But the sweet grass still grows tall, and Jesse John Black Bear talks to God in Cleveland, Ohio. And Washington is joking, but the Navajos are not. And Mother Earth just keeps on giving while we're ripening. I talked to seven congressmen. Their ears were filled with gold.